Hi guys, so there is a plan for drivers. Yep, this is actually an official document from the government, and for all intents and purposes, it looks like the government, the current government, under Prime Minister Rishi Sunak, is declaring an end, or at least a pause, on the war on motorists. So what is this document? What does it contain? What is it all about? I'll tell you everything right after this. A brown car guy. Brown car guy. Right guys, so this is it. This is the document. This is what it looks like. There's a PDF. I'll put the link below. You can go and check it out. You can download it, whatever. And this actually, I'm literally watching now on TV, Prime Minister Rishi Sunak giving his big speech at the Conservative Party conference that's going on in Manchester at the moment. So while all of that has been going on, and obviously there's been this big focus on HS2 and what's happening there, I'm not going to get into any of that, but that's where all the media attention has been focused on. So what the media absolutely missed, and what we all seem to have missed, is that 2 days ago, this report, this plan for drivers, it's actually called The Plan for Drivers, was snuck out just 2 days ago. And normally if something has been snuck out under cover of other things that are going on, it normally signals bad news. But I've been going through the report and sounds pretty good to me. Let's have a look at it. Now this will take a while. Now I could just give you a summary, and you know there are summary bullet points in the report itself, and I could just give you that stuff, but I'm not going to. I'm going to actually go deep dive into this report because I think it's quite important for especially the audience that I have on this channel, as motorists, as car enthusiasts, as car people, as people that own and run cars. The bulk of this report is actually quite interesting, and I think that it's worth taking the time. So settle down if you want, hit the pause button, go get a cup of coffee or something, come back and let's get into this. So let's actually start with the foreword, and I wouldn't normally look at the foreword in something like this, but I think it is, again, in this case, it's worth just pausing and looking at that. It's by Mark Harper, who's the Secretary of State for Transport, and I'm just going to read out the first two paragraphs, because I think it's quite interesting. There's nothing wrong with driving. Most of us use a car, and for many, life would not be livable without that car. For those in rural areas, it is a lifeline. A car can hugely expand the independence of a younger person, as well as keep older people connected to key services and their families. Walking, cycling, and public transport are necessary in a multimodal transport system, and we support their continued growth, but they are not the right choice for everyone's journey. Being pro-public transport does not mean being anti-car. The easy political choice is to vilify the private car, even when it's been one of the most powerful forces for personal freedom and economic growth in the country. Used appropriately and considerately, the car was, is, and will remain a force for good. It is not right that some drivers feel under attack. I gotta say, I wonder if he's been watching my videos. Have you been, Harper, have you been watching my videos? Is that where you got some of this stuff, you know? Because I've been saying this for ages, you know, all this discussion about cars and just trying to paint or demonize a car and paint it as some kind of devil's automotive spawn. But the reality is, you know, like it says, I mean, I've actually used those words. The car is a force for good. And that's how the report kicks off. So that's promising. So I'm going to go straight off from that. I mean, again, if you want to read the full forward, like I said, the full report is there. The link is below. Go and check it out. Download a copy. It's quite a lot. If you're going to print it out, just beware. I think it's 25 pages in total. Or you can just read the HTML version online. So it's up to you. Anyway, drivers' priorities. Responding to drivers' priorities. This is the next headline. And it's quite interesting that the fact that, you know, and of course the cynics will say, and of course I think we all have a right to be a little bit cynical, of the fact that, you know, there has been a sudden shift in this attitude towards cars and motorists, particularly for a party that's clearly under pressure and that most people have pretty much written off for the next elections. Although going by what the speech, I've only sort of listened to half of Rishi's speech at the moment and seemed pretty solid. So who knows? You never know what politics do. You can't predict. None of us can predict the future. But certainly the cynics would argue that this is a party that knows it's going to lose, or thinks it's going to lose, believes it's going to lose. And therefore it's appealing to a broader demographic. So what do we mean by broader demographic? So here's where this gets quite interesting. So most adults in the UK drive. This is what the report says. There are 50 million people with a driving license in Great Britain. Now this is interesting because there's 40 million vehicles, right? There's just over 40 million licensed vehicles. And when you talk about the fact that there's 50 million people, now the key thing to realize there is that there's 67 million people in the country. So there's 50 million people have driving licenses out of 67 million people. We're talking about 75% of the population is basically drivers. So this guy, I'm surprised at that figure. I'm surprised that it's that high. But those are the figures that have been given. And it kind of makes sense because ultimately everybody uses a car. So, you know, you get a lot of people that are saying, well, you know, cars are overrated. Cars are not needed. We don't need them. And actually go, well, 75% of the population holds a driving license. You know, and out of the 50 million, 40 million presumably have access to cars. There's 40 million vehicles in the country. Now, it breaks it down into age as well. So obviously we know that older people drive, but this is interesting. Even among younger people aged 17 to 24, 85% expect to be driving regularly in the future, despite only 56% doing so now. So that's interesting. So even younger people, even though they don't drive, because we always dismiss younger people in this driving discussions, don't we? We just say, well, and this is clear, this is anecdotal, even with my own kids, you know, they're not as interested in cars or as interested in driving as we were, our generations, and even maybe the next generation after us, but the current generation, not so much. But apparently, they're quite pragmatic in that they're like, okay, I don't need a car right now, but I probably will do in the future. So that's interesting. So even they're like looking ahead and going, yeah, no, actually, this will affect me as well. Now, here's another interesting factoid. Cars are the most popular form of personal transport in the UK, comprising 58% of trips in 2022. So last year, nearly 60% of trips in the UK involved personal cars. 78% of all distance travelled. Wowzers. 78% of all distance travelled involved the personal car. That was 2022 figures. The car is the most frequently used mode of transport for commuting. So what has the government done? They're talking about what have we done? Helped drivers with the cost of living. Obviously, one of the biggest issues at the moment and one of the real arguments about the current, you know, implications of things like ULEZ and 20 miles per hour limits where people are getting fined and LTNs where people are forced to go the long way around and stuff like that is the fact that this is all adding to the cost of living crisis, because obviously we're still in the cost of living crisis. Inflation is still higher than it should be. Interest rates are still higher than they should be. So this is still important to us. They just remind us in this report, they remind us that fuel duty has been frozen since January 2011. There's been no increase in the main fuel duty since January 2011. In March 2023, the rates of fuel duty were maintained for another year by extending the temporary 5p fuel duty cut. It's funny though, we don't feel that really at the pump now, do we? Let me come back to that. And cancelling the planned inflation increase for 2023. That's what they say they've done. Now, they say that this basically saved households and businesses £10 billion over 2 years since the introduction of COVID. £10 billion it saved us, apparently. This is new news. This is news today. We have had the fourth consecutive month of increases in fuel prices. So oddly, while fuel prices did go down, and I've noticed it, you know, we went down to about 1.45 or something in my local fuel is for petrol. It's been going back up again. So I've seen it as high as 1.58 now in some of the pumps. According to this, unleaded went up from 1.5249 to 1.5701, an increase of 4.52. So that's basically nearly a 5p increase. Rises in August fuel went up by 7p and diesel by 8p. So there have been quite a few rises going on, despite what this report says. But I think that's got a little bit to do with oil companies. And the next paragraph actually talks about that. The government is giving drivers the tools they need to shop around and will monitor prices while it considers whether further research is needed to protect consumers. It will create a statutory open price data scheme for retail road fuel prices so that consumers can make informed decisions about where to go and fill up. That's interesting. So that's going to be some kind of national, I wonder if it'll be an app or a website or something like that, but some kind of national survey of where the prices are, what they are, and where you can get the cheapest fuel. That could be useful. I mean, already there are a few websites and stuff that do that. There are a few apps that do that, but it could be interesting. I mean, the trouble with those apps, I've noticed, is they rely on people locally inputting that data. So this probably would come from the retailers themselves, so probably would be more accurate and up to date. Investment in our roads, and this is one of the things that, like I said, I've only listened to half of the speech that literally as I'm recording this, the Prime Minister is giving a speech live at the Conservative Party conference. I've only listened to half of it, then I got bored. Whatever. But what I did hear was him talking about more investment in road infrastructure, particularly in the north. He was talking about, I think, in that context, but he was talking about a lot more in, investment in road infrastructure and in better roads and improving the roads and stuff like that. So this is quite interesting. And of course, this tallies with this idea that they're putting the brakes on the war on motorists and actually facilitating motorists more to be able to use their cars, even though at the moment we do feel like actually they're trying to take our cars away from us by making them so ridiculously and unfeasibly expensive to own, use and run that's ultimately what's going to happen. Anyway, this is what's being discussed. So with this next paragraph, it says the UK has some of the safest roads in the world. This is true. And this is true. This is another point that has to be kept in mind every time somebody talks about 20 miles per hour limits and stuff like that. And they talk about deaths. Yes, of course, every single death is tragic and should not happen and we should try and avoid it wherever we can. But we've forgotten fundamental things like driver training and pedestrian training. You know, driver training we still do, but, you know, we could improve that. But pedestrian training, I believe, is something that we've stopped doing in the UK. Because as a child, and I've spoken about this in a previous video, but as a child, I remember, like, even in primary school, being taught about roads and, you know, dangers of crossing a road and stuff like that. And then obviously then TV campaigns with the Green Cross Code Man and stuff like that. So it was drummed into us as kids that, you know, this is the road, this is where cars are, this is the pavement, this is where you are. So, and this is how you get across. So this was all important stuff that I think we've stopped doing. Anyway, since April 2017, we've invested 100 million in improving the top 50 most high-risk roads in England. In April 2023, we added a further 47.5 million to the fund. Across all 83 road safety schemes, this investment is set to prevent around 2,210 fatal and serious injuries over the next 20 years. Good news. Accelerated infrastructure to support zero emission cars to electric vehicles. And what they're saying is that on average, 720 chargers were added to the UK public charging network each month in 2022. Now, it sounds like a really good number, 720 per month. But I remember reading a statistic originally when they talked about the 2030 deadline, which of course has now been moved, the 2030 deadline to cut off the sale of brand new ICE vehicles, internal combustion engines vehicles, so there's petrol and diesel cars. That's now been moved to 2035, but when it was originally mooted and discussed and when it came into force, it was said that we would need 700 new chargers a day to be able to meet our projected requirements for EV charging, public EV charging networks by then. But anyway, 720 chargers a month in 2022. The government has supported, this is what I'm reading this now, installation of more than 400,000 charge points in homes and businesses. And they just confirmed that 16% of electric cars sold were, oh, sorry, of all cars sold last year were electric. And I think next year there's going to be, this is a separate video, I'll do another video on this once I get more details, but I think that quotas are coming in now, so there'll have to be minimum requirements from manufacturers. So definitely the EV revolution continues despite all of this, but then, you know, EVs are part of driving and they're part of car ownership, so why not? They have moved services online for quicker. This is actually historical. So 2022, 2023, over 95% of applications for driving licenses were made online, issued within 3 working days. I find that quite interesting because I thought that there were still delays and problems with the DVLA in terms of licenses, applying for driving tests and stuff like that because of the huge backlog from the pandemic. I'd love to hear your experiences. Let me know if that's still the case. We continue to make substantial investment in our public transport and active travel options. We want to help people get about easily, safely, and sustainably. Not to force people to use one mode of travel or another, or to price poorer drivers off the road. And while the cars we drive may be changing, the things that matter most to drivers remain the government's priority. It's a very interesting statement there, and I think very significant. In what is just said, and I think that, you know, this is one of those things that we need to take out and hold and actually hold it up to the government in months and years to come and say, this is what you said. Now just repeat that. We want to help people get about easily, safely, and sustainably, not to force people to use one mode of travel or another, or to price poorer drivers off the road. Remember that. This is what they said in their document, October 2023. Some drivers feel that measures are being taken that mostly favor the interests of non-drivers. This plan aims to redress that by showing that alongside the measures the government is taking to make walking and cycling more attractive and to support local bus and travel, rail travel, we are also on the side of drivers and trying to make their lives easier. Interesting. And now let's move into the actual plan. So they've actually got 5 plans. Smoother journeys, stopping unfair enforcement. Interesting. Easier parking. That'd be nice. Cracking down on inconsiderate driving. Fair enough. It goes back to driver training. I'm not against that at all. That's good. Helping the transition to zero emissions driving. That's point number 5. Now, so like I said, the next few pages actually summarizes the bullet points in each of those. But if you're bored of my voice, you could probably go and download the document and you could look at the summaries if you want. But I'm not going to go through the summaries. I'm going to go through the full paragraphs, the full text on each of these 5 categories. So, because I think it's important, you know. And if it's a longer video, then, like I said, I hope you have some coffee. I should have got mine. Anyway, smoother journeys. That was the first of them. Drivers are justifiably irritated by traffic not flowing when it easily could. Sometimes this is unavoidable, but the application of more thought and new technology, it could be solved relatively quickly. For example, drivers understand that roads and utilities beneath them need to be maintained to keep them safe, but when roads are continually dug up or repairs drag on, as though no one cares about getting them a road reinstated, that understanding will wear thin. Now, I've got to say, I have personal experience of this, because I live in Northwest London. I often find myself on the Edgware Road, on this part of Edgware Road, which literally goes up to Edgware. And so talking about from sort of Brent Cross flyover up to there. And I have to say, there is constant roadworks in there. And so many times I've wondered, why hasn't, you know, is it the most incompetent planning ever? Because it just seems like you dug up one piece, you sort that out, and then you go, oh, damn, we forgot to do this bit now. And then they go and dug up. And it's just constantly contraflow systems and, you know, digging up roads and road work. It's just like every single time. And you just find yourself thinking, oh, okay, it should take me 10 minutes to get to Brent Cross. And suddenly it takes me 30 minutes to get to Brent Cross because they've screwed everything up. And it just doesn't make any sense. And you go, why are they doing that? And part of you, the cynic in you, does start to think, well, is this a deliberate attempt to just put people off using the Edgware Road altogether, you know? So this is what they're saying. Now moving on to LTN. So what are low traffic neighborhoods? This is what LTNs are. Low traffic neighborhoods are, you may have seen, you know, where they block off certain roads by putting, you know, these potted plants and things like that. And the idea is to reduce through traffic through residential streets and stuff like that. Now, if the residents want this, I think it's okay, you know, if they find that, you know, they're getting too much traffic or they're having problems or it's a safety issue then, or it's a pollution issue, then in certain extreme circumstances, it could make sense, you know. And I always say that all of these things need to be applied in context. You just can't blanket bomb everything. It's like the 20 miles per hour thing. I've always said, you know, if you're putting outside schools or hospitals or on high roads, it makes perfect sense, you know, and especially if there's certain times or whatever, it makes perfect sense. But if you just go blanket 20 miles per hour ever, everywhere, and on a quiet residential street in the middle of the night, and you're going to be forced to do 20 miles per hour, it doesn't make any sense. So it's all about context. And with the LTNs, again, a lot of what happened is that they introduced LTNs in areas where the residents actually didn't want them, and then the residents actually took matters into their own hands by trying to move these blocks and things and make space for cars to get through. So we've already announced a review of LTNs that were deployed fairly and with local support, to ensure that they are deployed fairly and with local support. And also, we are looking to prevent the introduction of area-wide schemes, sometimes described as 15-minute cities, that feature excessive traffic restrictions and even permits to ration car use, do not offer transport choice, and have failed to secure the support of local people and businesses. So this 15-minute city situation, what happens there, and I think we have this in Oxford now, is that you divide the city up into sections. And you go, this is your section, and within this section, you're allowed to drive freely. If you go from this section to this one, so literally, like, if you go across the road to that side, you can do it for a certain number of times a year. So this is what it talks about rationing car use. You can give you a permit to do it, like, you know, whatever number of times you can do it. And if you do it more than that time, then you can't do it. You will get fined. And at that point, what you then have to do is to go out and join a ring road or a circular route, and then come back in through a designated route to that place. And what that will do is, of course, increase your travel time, increase your fuel use, probably increase emissions because you're going to join, you know, busy traffic areas. So it just sounds like it's just going to make things a lot worse. So what they're saying now is that they will restrict that. So that's interesting. And the 15-minute cities are something that, you know, there's a lot of hate for those, as is for LTNs and as is for 20 miles per hour limits, which I know that, you know, Rishi Sunak has also spoken about. So they're going to explore and consult on options, including legislative changes to do this, including removal of access to DVLA data from councils that pursue such schemes. We will consider whether new guidance is also needed about the way consideration is given to the needs of all users of road networks. Now, this is very interesting because you may have missed that, but let me repeat that again. We will explore and consult on options, including legislative changes to do this, including the removal of access to DVLA data from councils that pursue such schemes. Whoa, that's interesting. So what you're meaning is, like, if councils basically put up these things and then basically fine people by their own cameras or whatever for using, for, you know, breaking the rules of LTNs or 15-minute cities or whatever, they may not be able to find them because they won't have access to the DVLA database to find out whose car that actually is. Wowzers. What we have done so far, we are investing $24 billion in England's strategic road network, our motorways and major air roads, over the period 2020 to 2025 through the delivery of second road investment strategy. This includes a program of major enhancement schemes, but also significant investment in renewals and maintenance of the current network to ensure that it continues to be safe and reliable. We were already invested over $2 billion in the first 3 years in renewals of the network, such as resurfacing, etc. Potholes. Right. We know that potholes are the bane of many drivers. Oh my God, the potholes around here in Northwest London, you could lose entire cars in them. They're not potholes, they're chasms of chaos. They are dungeons of doom. You know, you could lose an entire small hatchback, could just disappear into those things. We know the potholes are the bane of many drivers. We are determined to tackle them. We are investing more than £5 billion from 2020 to 2021 to 2024 to 2025 to maintain local road networks, with an extra £200 million announced at the budget in March 2023. This funding is enabling councils up and down the country to fill millions of potholes, repair dozens of bridges and road surface roads. That's great news. My understanding, though, from other stuff that I've seen, is that it's not enough. I know, £5 billion sounds a lot, right? £5 billion just to fill in some holes. But apparently, it's not enough. So let's see if there's more money coming for that. But and let's see if it makes any difference around here. I'll certainly immediately notice if there is a difference. At the moment, there isn't. Street Manager Digital Services has been used by every utility company and local authority since 2020, helping to coordinate over 2 million works that take place in England each year. Not in Edgeware, they aren't. Whatever the Street Manager Digital Services, they're not using it here. But this is basically about quality, about organizing the resurfacing of roads and stuff like that. So let's see. There is more that we can do. Strengthen guidance to local authorities on the operation of bus lanes. For example, bus lanes should only operate when bus services are running or when traffic flows are heavy. and ALF2 delay buses. Refresh the technical advice. Make it clear local authorities should use their powers to ensure bus lanes are open to motorcycles. Interesting. And we'll launch a consultation on motorcycles using bus lanes as a default. Good news for bikers there, potentially. Stopping unfair enforcement. I know you guys would be interested in this one. The rules of the road are there for a reason. The highway code promotes good behavior and sets rules which improve safety for all road users. Okay, that's fair. Where there are rules, there must be enforcement. But we need to balance an enforcement regime that cracks down on dangerous driving practices while also at its heart trusting responsible drivers. We must discourage dangerous and irresponsible driving while not treating well-intentioned drivers as a way for local authorities to raise revenue. Something very interesting here. I was talking about this the other day to somebody. And, you know, I remember, like, you know, back in the 80s, 90s even, certainly in the 70s, when there were no cameras around. And, you know, you'd get pulled over or you'd get stopped. And, you know, normally what would happen is that you just get a talking to. A stern talking to, a bit of finger wagging. You know, you'd get that. And for most of us, that'd be enough. Because we'd be like, oh my God, oh, you know, and that'd be enough. And this was called discretion. This was called the police discretion. So it was up to the police officer to decide whether or not, you know, it was serious enough to warrant them issuing a fine, you know, paperwork and points and causing people hassle with their insurance companies because now they've got points and all this sort of stuff, you know, for very minor things. So it had that freedom. Of course, the trouble is now that's not there anymore because now there's just cameras and cameras are merciless. Cameras are not discriminatory. They just, you know, they just go right, blanket, that's it, you get fined, that's it. You go 1 mile per hour, that's it. So many people I've heard of with the 20 miles per hour limit becoming, you know, for the first time ever getting a speeding fine because they were doing 24 miles per hour, which is absurd. You know, I mean, 24 miles per hour. It's just crazy. Some drivers are concerned that local authorities use penalty charge notices, PCNs, far too liberally. Indeed. Not to make our roads safer and easier to navigate, but simply to raise revenue. Or, yeah. As a result, drivers feel unfairly penalized for using their cars in the local area. In London alone, more than 7 million PCNs were issued in the year ending March 2022, an increase of 41.3% on the year before and 21.4% on the last pre-pandemic year of 2019 to 2020. 40% increase. Gosh. And it's probably down to the 20 miles per hour limits, really, isn't it? A significant proportion of these PCNs were related to LTNs and school streets. So clearly the 20 miles per hour limits. Although don't speed in front of a school. Just under half, 42.8 of these PCNs were successfully appealed. Interesting. Update guidance in England on 20 miles per hour speed limits. Aha, here we go. While 20 miles per hour zones are an important tool in improving road safety in residential areas, overuse risks undermining public acceptance. Yeah, this is what I've been saying. So, you know, you just do them everywhere, people just ignore them. Whereas if you do them in particular areas, they have more of an impact. So we are clear that 20 miles per hour zones should be considered on a road by road basis to ensure local consent, not as blanket measures. Exactly. This is what needs to be done. Next point. Stop local authorities using so-called 15-minute cities to police people's lives. I like the wording of that. And I'm surprised it's in a government document. But I do like the wording of that. Stop local authorities using so-called 15-minute cities to police people's lives. We will consult on measures including the removal of local authorities' access to DVLA data. I've already told you that. One area of enforcement that drivers feel is particularly unfair is the enforcement of yellow boxes. Yes, another good point. Wow, somebody's been really doing their research, but yes, absolutely. Because so often with the yellow boxes, it's like, you know, purely unintentionally, sometimes you find yourself trapped in it. You know, if the traffic situation has suddenly changed, if you've been caught out, you're turning right in a red light, yellow light situation, you've been caught out, traffic moved too quickly, you're stuck in the middle there, or you were caught out in at the flow of the slow-moving stop-start traffic in the city and suddenly you find yourself in a yellow box unintentionally. There's so much of that happens, but again, cameras that have no discrimination, no mercy, they just zap you and then off you get a fine, you know, simple as that. So, this is currently confined to London, with more councils taking powers to enforce moving traffic offences. This issue is likely to grow. So what are they going to do? Support the work of the British Parking Association to tackle this issue. We'll support the work of the British Parking Association and other stakeholders to develop sector-led guidance for fair, proportionate, consistent enforcement approach outside London using moving traffic enforcement powers for the first time, especially for yellow box junctions. Okay, strengthen statutory guidance on yellow box junctions. Okay, here we go. Our guidance would build on the sector guidance, but it would have a statutory basis and would require reviews of yellow box junctions where a disproportionate number of PCNs are issued. So, where there's too many fines happening, they'd be like, well, hang on, why is this happening? Okay, this is a bit unfair, and then they would change that. Launch a call for evidence on options to restrict the local authority's ability to generate surpluses from traffic contraventions, which may create an incentive for overzealous enforcement, in particular of yellow box junctions. You hear what that's saying? That's saying that where it becomes obvious that councils are basically trying to, you know, generate surpluses from traffic contraventions. So basically they're trying to generate revenue from it. They're trying to make money out of it. They're like, oh, well, what's going on here? Easier parking. Okay, let's move on to this one. I'll just move on quickly to what's going on here. Basically, this bit relates to the fact that there's so many different parking apps and stuff at the moment, and they're trying to centralize that. People want choice in how they pay, but they do not want their mobile phones to be filled with dozens of different parking apps. Increasing connectedness is also beginning to bring parking into the digital age. Sensors can tell parking garages which bays are occupied and which are available. A scheme was launched in 2018 to deliver 2,000 sensors in on-street bays and council runoff parking areas. Drivers could use an app to find a free space immediately, pay by the minute, rather than in hour-long segments, and sign up for services that stop the meter automatically the moment they drove away. So that's useful. So instead of like, you know, you end up, sometimes you park, and you've just parked for 10 minutes, but you've had to pay for the whole hour. So that will be addressed. This is going to be digitized, which will be a good thing. And you'll be able to find out where the free spaces are. Since 2021, the Department of Transport has funded a pilot called the National Parking Platform, NPP. This has started in Manchester and now spreading to 3 further areas. It provides a hub linking together parking sites with multiple parking apps. This allows drivers paying for parking to use their choice of app rather than whatever app the local council has basically signed up with. Pilot has been successful. Project is now ready to move forward to the next phase. Good. Inconsiderate driving. One of the things, actually, before we move on, one of the things the government needs to see. So when I was in Dubai, I used to live in Dubai. If you would, I did get done a few times with the cameras there for speeding. But the great thing there was that if you thought you might have been done, because over here, if you think you might be done, there's no way of checking until, like, you know, 2-3 weeks, months later, when you get a fine in the post. But over there, you could actually go online and check immediately. Put your number plate in, and it would tell you straight away. Because they're all digitized, they're all smart. So straight away, you would know, oh yeah, I've been done, this is it. And it's like, oh, let me just pay the fine now and get it done. You know, so you could just do that. So why we don't have that here, I don't know. Why can't we, like, check instantly? Just put our number plate in, see what, and then you find. And actually, that way, it was also quite useful, because if you're buying a car or something, you could actually go online and check if there were fines, because sometimes people are selling cars after 30,000 dirhams of fines on the car, you know. And so you'd be like, no, you haven't paid these 30,000 dirhams, so you've got to sort this out first. But anyway, an insurance company poll found that the examples of bad driving: braking suddenly to scare the person behind, whew, tailgating, not pulling over for emergency vehicles, overtaking when going slowly, throwing rubbish out the window, offensive hand gestures, middle lane hogging, parking in disabled bay when they're not disabled, driving to the front of a merge lane and then pushing in, not merging in until the last minute. Well, those two are the same. So what have we done so far? We have invested 100 million since April 2017 in improving the top 50 most high-risk roads in England. In April 2023, we added a further £47.5 million to the fund, bringing the total number of roads being improved to 83. Make motorway driving less stressful by working with the National Highways to identify options to encourage considerate motorway driving. National Highways will run a marketing campaign to educate road users on how to use all areas of the network. You know, to be honest, I have noticed that it used to be quite a thing on UK roads to keep that lane discipline of staying on the left unless you were overtaking. But now it appears to have become the norm, as it is, to be fair, in many other countries where people just drive in the middle lanes or the middle two lanes, you know. And you kind of understand that. A, because sometimes, you know, you can't jump into the high-speed lane to overtake because then traffic is rushing past and the person in front of you is moving too slowly. You only need to go like 2 miles an hour extra to pass them. So you go into the left lane to pass them. Also, the extreme left lane as I've often found, the road surface is terrible because it's obviously mostly used by trucks and lorries and stuff like that, and they has more bumps and ridges and undulations in it. So that's often the case. But anyway, the correct procedure, however, remains that, you know, you should stay on the left, you know, unless you're overtaking. And I have seen that that's being employed less and less by drivers in the UK now compared to, say, how it was 15, 20 years ago. That's for sure. So apparently there's going to be more education by that. But, you know, again, educating drivers, educating pedestrians, I always think that's a good thing. I think one thing that's missing from all of this is an education campaign for pedestrians. I think that's also an important thing to be reintroduced, I believe. Okay, let's move ahead to transition to zero emission driving, which is actually the final section of the 5 points. And so we already talked about the fact that they have got more chargers. Network of public chargers is growing rapidly with over 48,100 available in September 2023. So this is last month. This is a 43% increase since the September the previous year. So year on year, it's a 43% increase in public charge points. And like I said, there's over 400,000 now. The government has spent over £2 billion already supporting this transition. And the government announced £380 million of funding for local authorities across England through the Local Electric Vehicle Infrastructure Fund. This will deliver tens of thousands of local charge points and transform the availability of charging for drivers without off-street parking. And this, of course, is the big issue with EVs, which I've always said, that EVs right now are suited to those people that have drives or either live in buildings, newer buildings. Some newer buildings already now have EV bays in them, so where residents can charge their car, leave their car charging. But for most people, it's a real issue because if your car is on the street, how are you going to charge it? You know, running a cable down there is a hazard. There are some companies now that do things like, you know, have these arms that come out the side of your building, and then you can just use those to lower a line down to your car. But then you have to buy those things. You have to install a home charger and then buy that. So, but it's out. There are solutions out there, but they don't necessarily work for everybody. So this is talking about, you know, adding thousands of local charge points that, you know, will help people that don't have off-street parking. What are we doing next? We will continue to work with distribution networks to review the grid connection process to accelerate charge point delivery. Consult on easing charge point operators' ability to install charge point infrastructure, so making it easier for them to add that. Provide additional support for schools to install charge points through our workplace charging scheme. Government grants currently support the installation of charge points at workplaces. Schools have one of the largest estates of any public building entity in the UK and are traditionally centred in residential areas. Providing a potential source of charging for staff, visitors and local residents at nights, weekends and during school holidays. That could be a good idea, actually. Consult on the expansion of permitted development rights to take private charge point installation cheaper and easier. Okay, so just make it cheaper and easier to put more of these in place. To provide guidance on the use of safe cross-pavement solutions and best practice local authorities and relevant legislation permissions to consider applications. Again, this is about off-street parking and how it is to make it safe for pedestrians where you're running cabling or charging cars that are not parked in driveways, but actually on streets. There we go. Let me know what you think. I told you it was going to be a long video. Let me know what you think of that. Let me know what you think of all of these things that are coming through. There's some real significant statements in there, statements of intent, and there's some real significant actual things that they are apparently doing. But a lot of the takeaway is actually the sentiment behind the report, which mirrors the sentiment of people such as myself that have been banging on and on about. It's like, you know, we're not saying that we don't want to improve air quality. We're not saying that we don't want to help the environment. We're not saying any of that. What we are saying is don't unfairly penalize drivers or people that just need to get around by the use of their cars, which actually equates to, you know, was it 78% of total distance in the UK and 58% of all journeys. That's a substantial amount. So yes, these are the people that are going to vote you in or not. So you've obviously got to appeal and look after their needs, but it'd be very interesting to see how much of this actually translates into action, particularly when we've got a government fighting for its life in possibly an election next year. Love to hear your comments. See you all in the next video. Brown car guy.
Hope you enjoyed that video. If you did, please, please hit the like button and share this video as well if you can. And while you're at it, check out these guys who also sponsor my content. I am deeply grateful to them because it helps me to buy new equipment, put fuel in the cars, and yes, buy a cup of coffee. You can do the same. Just go here or right here on YouTube. Just hit these three little dots down here and click on thanks. Make sure you're signed in first. My content is free, but this is how you can help me keep it that way. I may even send you a gift. Oh, by the way, watch this next.